Welcome to whatever this episode is of The Carmudgeon Show.
I'm Derek Tam-Scott. That's Jason Camisa. We are part of the Haggerty Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. I think a big part of it.
A couple other podcasts.
And this episode is a random number generator
car review.
Episode in which we revisit cars we've driven in years past and share always friendly and positive and complimentary comments about various cars that we have not driven. Just kidding. Jason is
under the same.
The spiciest car review that I've ever heard you share, I think, was in this episode. It was really ruthless. But anyway, don't worry, you can still buy one. New, almost, I think. Okay.
Well. If you like hearing me shit all over Nissan GTRs, you can consider, you could possibly, unless you own a Nissan GTR, consider joining the Haggerty Drivers Club, which gives you unlimited flatbed towing for all of your classic cars, except for Nissan GTRs, a subscription to our award-winning magazine, which does not ever cover Nissan GTRs, or better not. I have no problem with this car. I don't know why that review was so evil. But anyway, there's a link below, so you should check that out. We need to get out of here before someone firebombs me over that GTR thing.
Okay. And away we go.
Clap and be gone.
Clapping. I'm going to do it.
I have actually been very bad about adding things to my spreadsheet. Apparently, the last car that I had added was, where was it? It was 11/16 of 2023.
Oh, wow.
So I haven't added, I got to go back through and add a bunch of stuff. but it's just been so busy. Like, I haven't made Instagram posts lately. I haven't done anything because it's busy. But the last car that I drove was a 1977 Pontiac Firebird. Oh. Randy Popsicle's car.
Oh.
It makes all the most ridiculous noises.
Is it very stock?
Very not stock.
Yeah, I figured.
So we are here doing one of our favorite things to do, which is a random number generator episode. If you've not seen one of these before, Jake, as opposed to, i.e. Nuovo Paolo, this is Jake's first ever random number generator episode. We'll have a random number generator call out a number between 1 and 2,789, which will correspond to a line in my spreadsheet or Derek's spreadsheet gives us notes about a car that we once drove. And the idea is that we will read out. So these are just basically super quick car reviews. This is, if we're being honest, a sort of like one of those episodes, like when your teacher would come in with a VHS cart or DVD cart and just be like, all right, kids, I'm hungover. So you're watching a movie.
I'll be outside back having a cigarette.
Exactly. So we're just, you know, taking it easy, but it's fun. It's fun for everyone. So backed by some semi-possible popular demand.
Somewhat popular demand by us.
Ish. Yeah. All right. So Jake, if you're ready, you can scream a number at Derek and he will go first.
216.
That's going way back.
Gotta work, fire up my scrolling muscles. 216. 2003 BMW Alpina Z8 Silver Red. This is the automatic version of the Z8 with the Alpina engine, which is not a motorsport engine. It's just a 4.8 liter version of the regular 740 engine. And for some reason, actually the actual reason is because they made 555 of them. They're more expensive than the manual transmission version with the motorsport engine, which is completely inverted.
Thank you, because that's one thing I never understood. Okay, it's got the gorgeous wheels because it's an Alpina.
End of list.
Yeah, but it's ruined because it's an automatic and a non-M engine.
Yes, it's rarity, but they are worth considerably more than the regular Z8. For once, the one you want is less expensive. $200,000 right instead of $300,000.
Right side.
Less expensive.
Save $100,000. Yeah, that's stupid. This was 216. On March 30th of 2007, I drove a 2007 Jaguar XK Coupe, 1,615 miles.
You didn't do all of those in one day.
Probably not, but I did actually. All right, I'll tell you a second. New York City and back via Pittsburgh. This was to Michigan and back. Great highway cruiser, great back roads car, amazing body control, great handling, but the secondary controls really disappoint. Materials are mostly fantastic. Workmanship is not. This was a long-termer that we got at Automobile Magazine that I wrote that I would burn a Daihatsu for having interior quality like this when it showed up. And then I put that in a logbook. We had a literal actual logbook in the car. I just wrote comments in there. I was just scratching off all these nasty comments because it arrived. And it was like the center console has like the sides of the center console have like snap in, like clasp in trim pieces that were leather lined. And one of them was hanging off. And so I smacked it back in. And when I did that, the top of the footwell trim fell down and dropped covering the pedals. And so I went in and snapped a couple things and it was missing two screws. So I put some screws in it and I just went through the whole car and there was like a gap between the shifter surround and the dash that was so big enough for me to put my finger in. And then after all of this time, I spent like 2 hours just fixing the interior of this car. And I'm not kidding, light bulb hanging down in the footwell. I found a build sheet. And the build sheet had an asterisk on it and said, pull aside for media evaluation and verify that, like, you know, go through it. Jake is nodding his head because he's never seen one of those things before, having worked previously at a fleet company.
That handles all the press loans.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was the best possible case scenario. And the car was such a piece of shit. But of course, when our managing editor, Amy, wrote the Four Seasons test wrap up, she put that fucking comment in and didn't quite say, well, actually it was completely falling apart. And so I got quite nasty gram from Jaguar, but they deserved it. So,
okay. Well, great motor and the rest of it's kind of secondary.
Right.
Enjoy.
Yep. Right. Jake. 902, which is the car that replaced the Porsche 911.
Yes, the four-cylinder one.
901.
Yes.
902. Wow. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. This is on January 6th, 2010. I drove a Nissan GTR 13 miles. Oh, this is, I'm afraid to read this. this is long, so I'll see if I can summarize it. To the far in the future reader of this magazine who looks back through the archives to see what the press had to say about the used classic GTR you've purchased, read very carefully. I hate, hate, hate your car. This one is an absolute perfect one because clearly I meant that the reader of this magazine was actually the watcher of the Carmudgeon Show doing a random car review. By virtue of its outrageous acceleration, it managed to fool every journalist in this business, except me apparently, into thinking it was a marvel when it is, in fact, wretched. A truly dreadful engine in sound, lag, and character mated to the only twin clutch transmission so hideous in its operation it makes BMW's SMG of a decade ago seem like the second coming of power. Second coming of power transmission. Horrendous ride quality and terminal understeer start the fight. I think this got it garbled. I don't care that all the horses are enough to correct the cornering imbalance. An imbalance shouldn't exist in the first place. This is a terrible car, and one that I hope becomes notorious not only for its acceleration, but for providing a perfect example of everything that is wrong with the modern automobile. Yes, dear reader, your car sucks. If you want to go drive a sports car, go drive a 911, a Mazda Miata, a Honda S2000, a Porsche Cayman Boxster, a Corvette. Those are sports cars. The GTR is a real-life video game that could have only come from a mandate to make this car fast without any attention paid to make this car pleasurable or, heaven forbid, pleasant. A miserable piece of shit that I don't want to ever drive again. It wasn't even fun in the snow, and everything is fun in the snow. Oh, and what the hell happened to the engine? I've driven cars with blown engines that vibrate less than this. Seriously. The fucked up thing is, I remember that night, and I can't believe it's only 13 miles, because I spent half the night, this must have been a different night, out snow drifting the thing. It was a long-termer that we had, unless this was like, this maybe had been an early one, and I immediately got it to overheat. So the center diff is a clutch pack that overheats in those cars if Jesus tells it to. And I was in the middle of a drift in a neighborhood, just at like 30 miles an hour up this like hill. And it was just my 3000 RPM, just a little bit of an opposite log, and poof, overheated and sent me into fucking low earth orbit. I was so mad at that car. But I love that. scathing op-ed.
Yeah, that was really spicy. Do you dislike every GTR that much? And why haven't we talked about this before? Because I don't feel like I've ever heard you go on a GTR-related tirade.
I didn't know I hated it that much. You know, as time has gone on, it's become less outrageous, right? It was ahead of its time in its turbo-ness and speed, I guess. I would say that if I had to cover a really... If I had to like escape a pack of zombies, a GTR is still up there in terms of one of the fastest over the road cars. It does understeer hideously and you can control it with, excuse me, the throttle. But it wasn't as bad as I said it was. They sound like vacuum cleaners. They're charmless. They're completely charmless. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my problem, was that like we just moved into a world of charmless, but I had no idea what numb steering really felt like until E-Pass came along. That was still hydraulic.
Yes.
I would never choose one. It's everything I don't want in a sports car. 4,000 pound all-wheel drive torque vector, not
turbocharged.
So, mm-hmm. Have you driven one?
No, I haven't.
We need to get Derek in our GTR.
I'm curious to see just
can't
how
call
poor
Nissan
it is.
And ask for one after that. Fucking
why there? Otherwise, you could because they still make the damn thing, right?
Yeah. No, we need to get you in one. Let's do, okay, we can do a whole...
I have a client who has a number of them.
Okay, can you block him? Or actually, before Jake edits this, can you go and drive it quickly before he sees this episode? God, that was really brutal.
Really was. Wow. Must be very bad.
But I love that I love that sort of like...
The future reader is you, which ended up being the public.
Well, and here we are, 24 years later. That's 14 years later.
That was 902. Mm-hmm. My 902 is a 1985 Peugeot 205 Turbo 16. That's the Group B homologation rally car. Hmm. On the 9th of May, 2022, this is a car that I've talked about this car, I think, at length before. Maybe even it was a number we called, although I definitely don't recall reading that. It is it's a Group B car that's mid-engined and it looks like a hot hatch, but when you drive it, it doesn't feel like a hot hatch. Very heavy controls. It feels like an exotic. It feels like a Ferrari from the same era. The gear change and the control forces and the weight of the steering, it's all very, exotic car feeling, despite the fact that it's a hot hatch, which makes sense when you consider what the car's mission was, that it's a homologated version of a race car. Massive turbo lag. Super low compression ratio. I remember we tried to take photos of it in town up in front of a church, but the car matted in first gear, couldn't make it up the hill to the church, and so we decided to photograph it somewhere else.
You're kidding.
I kid you not.
Like, actually couldn't make it up.
Yes, it was matted in first gear with the clutch out, and the car could not make it up the hill. And I was like, well, we're not going to be moving anymore. And so then I rolled down to the bottom of the hill and got a running start at it, and it still wasn't enough power to make it up to the church in first gear.
Wow.
Yeah, really impressive lag. Mm. But immensely charming. Fire comes out of the exhaust. It's fun to hustle. Once it's on the boil, it moves well. And there's a lot of power up top. Like, sometimes turbocharged cars, they size the turbo to be responsive, which means it runs out of breath at the top end. This is not one of those cars. It's boosting right up to like 7,000. So it was charming if you weren't trying to get up a hill to a church.
Or like out of your driveway.
Yeah, I mean, but really cool, special, like feels like a piece of serious hardware. It does not feel at all like a 205 front-wheel drive hatchback, which, of course, it shares virtually nothing with except for the windshield and the lights.
Compare it to a Renault R5.
It's similar. Yeah, it's similar. I think maybe a little like laggier and more race car-y feeling in terms of being a little compromised and not suited to street use. But
interesting.
Yeah, it was fun.
My sister at one point had two Passat 1.8Ts, her and her husband. There was a sedan manual and a wagon automatic. She called me at one point. My mom had a crazy steep driveway. And she's like, don't laugh at me. I can't get the Passat out of mom's driveway. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, it just won't fucking go. And I get there and it was she had been mostly driving the wagon. And she parked it at the bottom of the driveway and she's like, it just won't go. And I started to try and the thing would not generate. I couldn't get going quickly enough to get to a speed where boost was
part
in.
So picture.
my choice was to either slip the clutch the whole way up the driveway, which would have happened, or go up as far as I could. There was a sort of carport next to the next to the garage that was alongside the house, and so I had my mom get her car out of the garage, which was a Nissan Sentra that foot to the floor went right up it. So I sort of went up the hill in the Passat and then rolled back down into the garage, tapped the wall in the back, and then dumped the clutch in reverse and just flew up the fucking driveway.
I was
going to
say reverse would be good because you have more weight on the...
Well, there was no... The whole time it was in reverse.
Oh, I see.
There was no way. There was nowhere to turn around. It was a fucking nightmare. And that was it. That was the end of that Passat.
Yes, this is why my best friend in college had an E36 M3 and his, I think, sister had a 1.8T A4. And he said, like, trying to parallel park it on a hill in San Francisco, he was just like, this is the stupidest car. I hate all Audis from now on. And he's, you know, now driving an E90, now drives an E90 M3.
There's that 1.8T has so many fans. I'm sorry. That was you know, your choice with turbos, as you just said, was typically either low RPM boost and fast response or high RPM power.
That's a Saab 900 way.
Right. Or high RPM power and nothing down low, like a 930 turbo sports car. And the 1.8T had the dubious distinction of having none. It is fucking laggy as shit and dead off boost and then done at 4,800 RPM. Yeah, I hate that engine. And the more you mod, the worse they get. Like Volkswagen got it right out of the factory. It was shit, but it got worse no matter what you did to it. So anyway, okay. Jake, next number.
1811.
1811. Derek, that one's on you.
1-8. Okay, what are we at? Oh. No, it's your turn, isn't it? Because we just did my Peugeot.
Hold on. What number was that supposed to be then? Sorry, did we fuck up?
No, we both did that. Okay, we did 902.
Okay. 1811. On September 8th, 2014, I drove a 2015 Dodge Viper TA during Road and Track's Performance Car of the Year, PCOD. Make it go away, please.
No.
I think everything's going to be negative. Make it go away, please. We've had enough. Fast? Yes. Awful? Yes, sir. Track. If Track Pro S were the only measure we cared about for PCODY, then we'd have a Viper winner. Incredible speed everywhere, but it's work. The brakes feel a bit fried and sometimes don't want to bite. And sometimes the rear wheels certainly do bite. Far more composed over the bumps than I would have expected. I don't care for this car at all. I'd prefer half the capability and twice the joy. 52 minutes, 30 seconds. 52.36 seconds. Can't keep up with the GT3 even at the same price. And that's a real luxury car. Viper, your time has passed. I sort of always appreciated the ACR was sort of a next level thing. I sort of always appreciated.
This was before or after that? This was before the ACR.
But the ACR sort of made the whole car a more cohesive package and made it more extreme. But I never loved Viper. I just would rather have a light-handed car versus such a heavy-handed thing that scares the shit out of you, but turns out to be a pussycat. Just not. Okay, what's yours?
It's an E30 M3. I mean, we talk about the E30 M3 with some regularity. Well, lacking in refinement, get the 325.
All right. Next number.
501.
Like a BMW 501. The Baroque Angel. Oh. This is a 2015 Fiat Abarth Black. Cinquecento. Those things are hilariously uproarious. Everyone should have one if you want to smile and go deaf.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I hear them.
They're bad, but good.
Yeah, they're bad cars, but they make
the shifter is kind of ropey. The steering position is hilarious. It feels like being in a bus, but it has so much character and all of the sort of joy of a good experience that just appeals to enthusiasts.
It's a shitbox GTI.
Yeah.
It's exactly what a GTI is. With all kinds of weird
compromises from an ergonomic and sort of quality. Like the shifter is so like just vague and long and random.
But Volkswagen was always the same.
Yeah, but it's worse than that.
It's always worse. And the steering wheel is like...
It's like a bus. It's horizontal and you're sitting very upright. You're on top of the car. I mean, it's just everything's bad, but it's good.
My 501 is a 2008 BMW X5 4.8i, i.e. the same engine as in your...
What year? 2008. Yeah, okay. Last of the X53s.
Right. This transmission is amazing.
E53s.
Both upshifts and downshifts are unbelievable. Easily the best transmission in the world. This would be a 6HP or a 5HP ZF. Engine is a masterpiece. I don't feel the missing low end torque that everyone's complaining about. Engine is surprisingly vocal at 80 miles an hour cruising. It got annoying, and mileage is abysmal. 2008, that was the first year of second gen.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, this was not okay. A 4.8 IS.
Oh, I got excited. This
is a 4.8 I.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Next.
I towed a lot of things with that X5. That's the X5 that knocked me out.
Oh, yes.
Knocked me unconscious because I was backing up. I was trying to put it on a trailer. I had the Scirocco on a trailer, and I was trying to back this up to attach it. And I opened the door to look behind, and it threw itself in park, and I woke up on the ground. Smacked my head on the B-pillar, motherfucker.
Because, it put itself in park.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
674,
which would be one less than a... Oh, dear.
McLaren.
McLaren, 675. Okay. This is October 9th, 2008. I drove a 2009 Jetta TDI DSG.
Oh, Dieselgate. This is before Dieselgate had broken, years before.
Overall, 44 miles per gallon on the highway. Started out around 40 with occasional bolts down to the high 20s when dumping fuel into the exhaust. And then it climbed to around 47 at like 72 miles an hour. Passenger door rattles by the speaker, and the Jetta is a nice highway cruiser. That's all I said. So this is part of All Stars, which is automobiles of the year thing.
Yeah.
And I just remember watching the fuel economy just hang out at like 47, 47, 47. And then it would dump down to like 30s.
And this is
20s,
when it was refreshing the diesel particulate filter.
Although those weren't, it wasn't a DPF, it was a NOx trap on those cars. Mm. So, but it would run sort of lean, normal mixture for a while until it trapped as much NOx as it could, and then it would burn extra fuel to burn that off. And you could watch it.
White smoke coming out of the exhaust while it was doing that?
I don't know. I was going too fast to look behind me. No, I'm kidding. I don't think they really did, but it would run rich for a little while and burn it off. And you could see it dump in, I said, in the high 20s. It would go for like, 10 seconds, the high 20s. Little did we know that it wasn't doing nearly as much extra burning as it was supposed to, but it was doing it. But anyway, okay. Your
674 Lancia Stratos HF green, 4th of May, 2022. This is the car that left me sort of speechless. It's so unhinged. It's so difficult to control. Every time I drove it, I was sure that I was going to die in it. I still desperately wanted it. It's a totally feels like it's out of control all the time kind of car. It is one of the most enjoyable but terrifying automotive experiences I've ever had.
On the continuum of enjoyable versus terrifying, i.e. in a bad way, where is it? Like, it's so...
It is as close as you could be to bad without actually crossing over to bad.
So you loved it?
Yeah, I loved it, but it was unhinged. Like, just absolutely wild. I really want to drive another one. It's the only Stratos I've ever driven, and I know those cars are super sensitive to setup, and they're famous for also having sort of, like, annoying understeer because the front end is so light, mm-hmm. and this car did not really have that, and I think it's probably the result of it having a fairly aggressive, racy setup. Mm-hmm. The motor was like that, too. I mean, I think it had a Group 4 engine in it, even though it was a street car. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very curious to drive another one because I think there's so much adjustability in the chassis and suspension by design from the outset for that car for various types of rally setups and driver preferences of the different racing drivers mm-hmm. that I'm sure that a different one that I drove would be very different in feel.
Okay. I have never driven one.
You must.
I would love to. 2396. Oh, while we're on the subject,
okay.
Lancia Delta Integrale Evo 1991.
This is the red one.
This is the red one. Need more time for sure. This is the first time I drove the car. I need more time for sure. Engine is smooth as silk, basically unbelievable. Clutch chatters pretty significantly. Ride is stiff. Steering is super light. Seats are comfy. Interior isn't nearly as rattly as you'd expect, although that is not saying much. Turbo lag needs to be measured in weeks. Charming, gorgeous, and I want more time in it. Which I did get a lot more time in it, and that thing is fucking...
It's a riot.
Really great. Yeah.
Very great mm-hmm. for hauling ass over a fast road. Like, I think it might be as fast as an F430 on a twisty road, point to point.
Why not faster?
Yeah. Perhaps.
On a bumpy road, for sure.
On a bumpy road, for sure.
Just absolutely unflappable.
Mine is a European rental car. It's a 2021 BMW 520D wagon.
Oh. Okay.
Surprisingly fast. Happy to hang out at the maximum speed.
You're talking speed limits in school zones, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The car's maximum possible speed.
250.
For having 200 horsepower, it was surprisingly fast.
200 horsepower. So what did it do? 200K? 210?
No, I think it was 230 or 240.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was impressive. I mean, you could just drive it everywhere flat out mm-hmm. and reasonable gas mileage, but, you know, modern BMW kind of devoid of character. It, just the coolness of it being a diesel wagon, I think, made up for that.
Despite the, all the children you gave asthma to while you're driving around, thanks to diesels.
It's the European way.
All right, next one.
2248.
2248. Ooh.
I have a 2009 BMW 335 convertible with a retractable hardtop from 2010. I don't really remember it. I'm sure it was fast because it has that twin turbo in the 6.
Okay, funny that your reaction is, I keep forgetting that you don't remember it because March 18, 2017, I drove a 2017 Jaguar XF35T and said, I keep forgetting this car exists, and that's not a good thing. Hopefully that wasn't while I was driving it. What is this? What am I in? Why am I going so quickly? it drives well, but not as well as I remember. It has the world moved on?
Is it an X? Did you say XF or XE? XF.
The 8HP, the transmission, is slow and clumsy. The steering is still numb. It's E-Pass after all. And while the handling itself is very nice, the interior quality or lack thereof ruins the whole experience. Mm. I just can't get behind a $60,000 car with a $20,000 car interior unless it's mind-blowingly spectacular to drive, and this isn't. It's louder than the Mercedes inside. The engine is coarser, and while the suspension is very good at controlling motions, it's just not good enough to recommend. So I sad to say. And that was... I think that was my last ever comparison at Motor Trend. And the Mercedes I was talking about was the AMG C43, which is not actually an AMG.
Yeah, that was a C450.
Yes. Yes, because this was, I drove my C43 AMG down 890 miles round trip to then drive 80 miles in a new C43 and 35 miles in that XF. Those were all. That was my last thing at Motor Trend. Mm. Just kidding. Okay.
2652.
Ooh. June 23, 2022, I drove a 2001 Acura Integra Type R. If you pick the right heroes, you absolutely should meet them. It's so tiny and dainty, especially inside. Dead steering is always with period Hondas, but the engine is absolute batshit. 9,000 RPM and it pulls the whole way there. Great NVH, meaning lots of it, not mm-hmm. great isolation. It idles at over 1,000. I love the VTEC changeover and the shifter. And though these shocks are likely seized,
This is the yellow car.
It's massless in the corners, absolutely without body motion. Yeah, the fucking shocks were seized. The rear is sudden and will bite, but it's magic. And the front and grip with that diff is outrageous. Sad to say the gearing is way too widely spaced for the engine's torque curve, so you're always either shifting after, hold on, so you're either shifting always over 8,500 or you're out of VTEC. And on a mountain road or the track, that starts to feel abusive. Mm. Mm-hmm. See, I do have a soul, compassion for these cars.
Yeah, when it's a manufacturer-owned car.
With no miles on it. I think that thing turned 6,000 miles on it when I was driving it.
Yeah. Mine is a 1969 Corvette L88 in Riverside Gold.
Bet you didn't rev to that thing to $9,000.
No, but the L88 is a really, really cool motor. This is an engine that was not available publicly. So the engine was rated at 435 horsepower, which is the same number of horsepower that the regular 427 was rated at, which cost a lot less money, and that's the L71 engine. The L88 came out specifically for motorsport, and it arrived for the first time at Daytona in 66, and then in order to sort of keep it as a production engine, they did sell it to the public, but it was never advertised. And so while it was rated at 435 horsepower, they were usually tested around 550 horsepower.
Holy shit!
And people would put drag radials on them and then go set, like, literally the car I drove set a world drag race record with tires on it and otherwise stock. So they made 216 engines of cars with this engine, Corvettes with this engine, of which this was, there were 116 and 69, which this car was, but just a wild animal. There's also a placard on the center console that says, do not put less than 103 octane fuel in it. That's from the factory or you will damage the engine. Cause it's like a 12.5-to-1 compression ratio engine,
but
aluminum cylinder heads, side exit exhaust. It was just, this thing had no business being a street car. So, you know, that's why they're hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Cool.
1827
says Jack Hay.
Why don't, oh yes, I remember this car. Am I going?
Yeah.
It's your turn.
If you spoke last, then you go.
Okay. 1988 BMW M6 Cinnabar Red on gray interior. This was like a 20-something thousand mile car. I love that engine, but I would prefer it in an M5. It's kind of heavy and inert. This car, despite having 20-something thousand miles, was parked at a shop getting maintenance work, and some drunk driver drove through the shop and broke a giant like showroom plate glass window, and so the whole car had to be repainted. It didn't get hit. It just... broken glass required repaint on the car, so it had non-original paint for that reason. But anyway, I mean, I would, yes, I like that engine a lot, but not in an M6. I mean, you would buy it in an M6 because you like the way it looks, but I prefer the M5 of that generation. This is the E24.
Yep. Cool. 10/13 of 2014, I drove a 2015 GTI Mark 7 six-speed manual performance. It takes all of, about 100 feet to realize just how good this car is. Grown up, effortlessly fast, but still an absolute riot. I couldn't love the plaid cloth more, and everything about this car screams expensive, except the missing sunroof. Powertrain is amazing, though has a lot more lag than before, and the interior quality is just so good. I love this car. Mm, and so that would be...
this is the Mark 7, the early Mark 7 with the PP. With big brakes and the good diff and maybe a little more power or something like that. There was red badges. Anyway, yes.
Black brakes, red badges, and the diff. XDS was there. Yeah. Diff? Cool. All right. 1485. Okay, this one's pretty quick. January 16, 2023, I drove a 2013 Honda Civic EXL, all of 8 miles. I didn't hate the short-lived 12 Civic, but this is definitely an improvement in refinement. A nice, subtle one.
Okay. A nice, subtle improvement.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Mine is a 1998 Bentley Turbo RT Mulliner. They made 55 of these for the world, and I think 12 came to the U.S. I've always lusted after this car. So the SC generation Turbo R is, I think, just the bee's knees. And the RT Mulliner was like the one that got the body kit with the projector fog lights and the two-tone interior. This car had the limousine-style small rear window, and it had a rear speedometer for the occupants in the back. And it was British Racing Green with a tan interior. It was just like maximum... everything that I think a 90s Bentley should be. Super cool car. Always, always, always wanted one of those.
They're very cool. Until you work on them.
Yes.
1708.
1708. Ruh-roh.
Mine is a 1985 BMW 325e.
Ooh.
Sedan.
Automatic
white manual.
Oh, nice.
That's the one with the base, may as well be a diesel because the RPM, the red line is so low. It was just like a dirt bag, shitty beater car that, you know, made good noises until you had to shift at 4,900 RPM.
That high.
It was white on tan.
You were well into the limiter at that point.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of all I remember about it.
That Edda was an interesting concept. The idea is that if you, so Edda was the name of the engine. It was actually instead of a 2.5, as the name would have applied, it was a 2.7. And they got that extra displacement via stroke. And the idea behind it was all fuel economy. And so the BMW had realized that engines do their best at full throttle and low revs. And so if you rev restrict an engine, like a diesel would be by nature of how slow the fuel burns, you can actually see quite a bit of a fuel economy improvement. So they rev restricted a 325i effectively by getting rid of the secondary valve springs And then putting a really mild cam in it. And so the thing made peak power at, I don't know, 4,200 RPM or something like that. And then because the cam forced the engine to make power at such low revs, you didn't need the high revs, so they can get rid of that secondary spring and then start reducing the number of bearings in the camshafts and stuff, all this different stuff to just reduce friction. And that was the idea. And then now that you have an engine that can't rev high or won't rev high and doesn't need to rev high, and you take advantage of those efficiencies, then you put super long gears on it and then force the driver to basically drive flat out right at its torque peak, which would be between 2 and 3,000 RPM in a normal range. And they actually did best. I mean, they got great gas mileage. I think they were better than the M10 four-cylinder. Mm-hmm. And this was 125 horsepower early on.
Yeah, and this debuted in 82 in the 528E, which mm-hmm. is, of course, right around the time that a development cycle that would have started during the second fuel crisis exactly. was materializing. And at the same time, Mercedes is putting turbo diesels and everything. This is BMW's way of sort of engineering a way to solve, I think, fleet average and fuel price yeah. concerns. So it's a fuel crisis special.
It was relatively smart because you had the fuel economy of a four-cylinder, but the
torque,
Laufkultur, the refinement of mm-hmm. a six-cylinder. And they actually sounded great.
Yeah.
And they're not bad to drive, but it was just one of these, one of many, many, many examples of BMW just fundamentally not understanding what its customers want or care about.
Well, if you have to do it in order to sell cars in the U.S. or you're trying to bring your fleet average fuel economy up, then
I mean, I still don't think they do.
Is that better than the diesel, Mercedes, everything approach? How many 528Es do you see versus 300Ds on the road today?
Yeah, but I think Mercedes was selling big cars and BMW was already selling small cars.
Yeah.
So I don't think the fuel crisis quite hit BMW the way it did in Mercedes.
Yeah.
And I just think
it was an America thing. Also, it should be added, right? Yeah. Did they even sell this engine in other overseas? They did,
but I don't know if it was specifically developed for America. But they were like, you know, that when the E30 debuted, it was 318 only,
yeah.
and it was a fucking ancient motor that really dated back to the 2002. And by the way, that car was only what it was because it needed a lot of displacement to get past U.S. emission standards. Mm-hmm. They couldn't clean up the 1.6 enough. And so BMW had no idea why everyone was so upset when, you know, this 318 came out and did 0-60 never. You know, to the Germans, this wasn't the ultimate driving machine. It was just a fucking car.
Yeah.
So
that's why when the 533 came out with the M30 and 181 horsepower, everyone was like, holy shit, thank God BMW is back. They're making exciting cars again, because the 528E was such a snoozer compared to what Americans were expecting of BMW.
And I think back to the time 87, the 325i came out, which was, wow, okay, they fixed the 600 problem. And then a year later, the M3 came out, so was quite the awakening for BMW's enthusiast.
Yes, I think EFI and also just the return of cheap fuel.
And M5, that same year as the M3, right? 88? Mm-hmm. Good year for him. Okay. 2.6 of 2014, I drove a 2014 Jeep Cherokee Trailhawk. Uh-oh. 197 miles. Well then, first impressions. It's absolutely hideous with that horrible front overhang and underbite alligator headlamps. And tail that's 3 feet too tall. Horrendous build quality with every panel gap too wide and too variable. Nothing lines up. Nothing. Headlights are pathetically weak, both in low and high beam. Cowl is so high, it seriously obstructs visibility. The ZF9HP has a huge ratio spread, well into third by 60, and then can only get into ninth going downhill over 70. Requires a 5-gear downshift into fourth on the highway just to maintain speed. The 2.4-liter Tiger Shark sounds like it's got direct injection, meaning it's coarse, but it's not. But it doesn't. Maybe that's the multi-air making that huge clatter. Decent flat power delivery, but sharp, nasally annoying, and buzzy engine note, despite being quiet at low revs. Occasional rough and very slow shifts confuse transmission and driveline. Even wide-open throttle upshifts have a nudge. Around town, the transcalibration is not good. Steering is dead but reasonably precise. Brakes feel good. Touchscreen has occasional glitches, like they won't turn the heated seats on. Map resolution is poor, and while it lets you slide or gesture, the processor is way too slow to keep up, and I think it's a non-capacitive screen, so it gets lost. By the way, these are my real, like, you know, notes. I was probably writing something on this, so this is like everything. Seats are comfy. ESP programming is unobtrusive and helps eliminate understeer by grabbing the inside wheels. ABS cycles slowly, but no steering feel at the limit whatsoever. No rain sensing wipers with every other conceivable option. God, I'm really tough on this. Both driver and passenger slam neon dash, turning circle of a Greyhound bus. Quiet on the highway, good ride with very good body control in the corners. But will customers want this level of body control and firm ride? Nah. Occasional big front wheel spin as if the computer won't send power to the back. Low range is jerky, of course, and the rear locker does work. Needs a styling rethink and a more refined powertrain, and might as well have a CVT. Also, 14.9 miles per gallon. I mean, I was hard on it, but that bad? That was a strange looking car.
It's a Jeep what?
Trailhawk, Cherokee Trailhawk, which was that bizarre rodent looking, I guess more like a alligator looking Cherokee. It was not pretty. 2014.
Eesh. Okay, don't buy one. Oh yes, it is unfortunate looking. Oh yes. Dear.
Yeah. That's the one we all forgot about. 604. Like the Peugeot 604.
Available in the U.S. with the turbo diesel at the same time as the W116. Sorry. Okay. Oh, I remember this car. It was garbage.
Okay. I drove a 1998 Lotus Elise Series 1 with a K20A swap.
Ah, yes. This is the car from the Icons.
Snack box has just fallen over. This is an interesting car. In my Series 2 Elise SE, the engine is the least interesting part of the car. In this car, it's easily the best part. I want this experience. No more difficult to get in and out of, maybe 5% more so than the Series 2. Dash is a clean design, but my God, is everything shitty. The switches all stick. The Series 2 is a much better car as a car. The driving experience is largely similar, but the K-swap gearbox linkage is pretty terrible. It idles at 1200 RPM by mistake sometimes, vibrates the whole car in all the right ways. You can't use the mirror at all. Non-assisted brakes are a surprise. Pretty stiff suspension on this one, but it still rides great. Don't love the looks, but I want a K20 in all caps. You drove that car or
rode it with you.
And
yes, I enjoyed the fact that the tachometer would stop, but the rev limiter would not be there yet. And so you'd just be pegged on the tach for the last 500 RPM or so.
Or more. I don't remember. Yeah, it was quite some time. We have a video that we'll insert. That engine was magic.
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. Good four cylinders, good. Yeah. But most are just not.
They're not. Yeah.
Mine was a 1965 Jaguar Mark II 3.8 automatic in white with a red interior. This car, I think, had some kind of issue with either the torque converter or maybe the way the carburetors were tuned, but I think I remember it would sort of turn itself off periodically, which is annoying in an automatic car. Overall, I like Mark IIs. This one just wasn't very good. But Mark IIs are really cool. I mean, those cars got used in period for motorsports. John Coombs would race them, and you know, it had the twin cam engine, which was really cool, and you see him sliding around sideways at Goodwood. It was a sort of vintage touring car.
They're so experience. Pretty.
They're very pretty, and you know, really beautiful wood dashboards and Connolly seats. And they're still pretty cheap. You can get a really nice one for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Although probably less now given what Jag values are doing.
Hey, listen, were like $20,000.
You can get a gnarly one for $20,000.
I mean, do you want a gnarly
one? No, you do not. It's worth spending the extra money for a nice one.
I want one with a motor swap in it, so it's just reliable. Like, can you like swap a whole chassis underneath? They're so great looking on the racetrack. I think that's things you see the Goodwood stuff, and they're always 5 degrees of opposite locks. Yeah. They're so fucking majestic. I love it. But you have to do it in like matte black with
black wire wheels, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Black wire wheels with chrome spinners, I think, look mega on those things.
I agree. Right, next number?
208.
Like the Ferrari Displacement Special for Italia. 208. Okay. I'm going to skip this one because it's another Z8.
I'm so sorry. This one you'll like. In 2007, I drove a 2007 Mercedes S550 4MATIC.
Oh, yes.
Really, really smooth and wafty. Great interior, drives like $1 million if you don't push it, because then it reveals how poorly calibrated and slow to respond the transmission is. That's all I wrote.
Okay.
Wonderful cars.
Yeah, I love that thing.
2169. SUV of the year. So now we've now had a road and track of the year, an automobile of the year, and now we're moving into a motor trend of the year. It's SVOTY. The first word in my... Oh, so this was, I'm sorry, 2017 Toyota RAV4. The first word in my notes, no. Too long a reach for the steering wheel, unbelievably cheap plastic on the dash topper, crap feeling to the HVAC controls.
Sorry, what was this again?
RAV4.
RAV4,
yeah. Sorry, have you heard of such a thing? I know, in between Jaguar Mark IIs and lovely Z8 BMWs, crap feeling to the HVAC controls, poor E-pass tuning with artificial weightlessness and strange torque steer artifacts. Huge body roll on the winding road, not as quiet or refined as the Escape, and doesn't ride as well, nearly as well either. Transmission is geared like a three-speed, doing 40 miles an hour in first gear, 70 in second. This is why, I don't know what it is with Toyota with this gearing. And the backseat can't match the Escape's room for room. So again, no.
I thought Toyota was supposed to make sort of generally compelling stuff.
They often do. Apparently that one wasn't.
Okay. Sorry. And what was this number again?
2169.
Okay.
I shall recuse myself for this is a $1 billion car, of which they made one and I can't talk about.
Oh, here we go.
Oh.
2002 Subaru Forester automatic.
Oh.
With a cloth interior. Yeah. It's so slow. So naturally aspirated.
The XTs were fast as fuck.
Yes, yes, but this later, is right? The first generation. Yeah. Automatic, yeah, 4-speed automatic with heated cloth seats. And it does that thing where there's a lot of response from the first few percent of throttle response, so it feels throttle travel, so it feels peppy.
Yeah.
And then after that, you realize that
where's the beef?
The last 75% of the throttle motion doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It's all just they cram it all in the first 25%. But yeah, just sort of miserable and slow and useless.
Yeah. Huge fans of Subaru in this room.
Well, when you have a naturally aspirated automatic one.
Yeah.
With a 4-speed automatic.
Yep.
1,029.
1,029. You're first.
1986 Porsche Carrera 3.2 Coupe in Prussian blue. This car was when I first started my first sort of consignment sales business, and I was in like college probably, and this thing had like 176,000 miles, and it had blue sports seats and gold BBSs and was a coupe, and it was $13,000, 170 something thousand miles, but looked and ran really nicely. But yeah, that was a $13,000 car, and it took like 2 or 3 months to sell.
What would it be now?
With 170,000 miles in that color combination, 70 or so. $1,000.
Yeah,
but great colors. Blue on blue with sports seats and gold BBSs.
That's cool.
What a vibe.
For the first time today, we have a match on the maker. This is a 2010 Porsche Panamera 4S. 63 miles I put on this, and this is in August of 2010. Excuse me. The glare on the dash from the upper vents and chronometer is unbearable. God, I'm really crucifying every car. There is no steering feel on center or in corners, but it does load up a lot. Too much, perhaps, it feels artificial. Approach the limit and something happens where the back of the car steers along. The wheelbase shrinks by 50% and this fucker just hunkers down and grips. That's amazing. But so what? The transmission sucks all the time, especially when it's cold and when it dulls out and... Transmission sucks all the time, especially when it's cold, when it doles out massive slippage and nonlinear throttle pedal response. The V8 doesn't sound particularly great, sadly. Lots of vibration all the time, especially when it's cold. That's out of character with the luxury feel. The Panamera-shaped key would be cutesy and inappropriate gimmick if it wasn't so difficult to use. Instead, it's just unacceptable. I hate that car. I've always hated that car.
See that.
Yeah. I think it was very, very... badly engineered thing. 114. Not to be confused with 1,104, which is what. What did I do? 104 act. Oh, GTI. All right, here we go. In On November 13th of 2006, I drove a 2007 Nissan Quest. Not as quick as you'd think with the 3.5. Horrendous ergonomics, but loads of space and easy to drive. Ta-da, my minivan review.
Yep, sounds like a minivan. Yep. Mine is a 1997 Audi A3 1.8T, which was not sold in the United States. The A3, 97, first generation A3.
It wasn't?
No.
It was the second gen that we got?
Yeah. First gen. This is the one that looks like a B5 A4.
Yeah. I had one in Germany as a company car, so I'm like...
They didn't sell them in the US.
Okay. I had a 1.9 TDI, which was...
Yeah, this was my host family when I lived in Switzerland's mother family car. It smelled like dogs inside. That's all I remember.
Okay. We had a diesel one. It was nice. It was good. A great fucking stereo. Great stereo. 2771. Oh, God.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
1971 Citroën DS21 Palace. Palace is the one with the nice interior, extra chrome trim and plush carpets and all that stuff. This is the one I used for the BTS video with the Citromatic. I mean, we've talked at length about Citroëns, but this one was a little bit rough, but charming nonetheless. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. You have to drive one if you haven't.
C'est vrai. I'm going to go to the opposite spectrum. This is... this is not a Palais version of any car, although it is the one with the big motor and the nice interior. It is a 2015 Chrysler 200S front wheel drive V6. you know, this car is one of our crew. I put 800 miles on the car.
It is also the butt of frequent jokes.
We torture him. But it is fucking stupid fast. And yeah, anyway, surprisingly fast. And it's got a 9-speed. Like, this is the thing everyone forgets, is the Dodge Dart had the Tiger Shark 2.4 liter, and then the 200 also did, but the S had a 9-speed transmission with front-wheel drive and 300 horsepower. So surprisingly fast, the 9HP is a monster with the 3.6, although also 31-plus miles per gallon on a road trip to Palm Springs like a lunatic is pretty amazing. 35 is easily possible on the highway at 70 to 80. Bit rough around the edges. Great stereo, but the subwoofer rattles the entire interior. U-Connect is great. Ride is okay, but marred with clunks and squeaks that belie the 70,000 miles on it. Feels like 170,000. Xenons aren't great. Turns out they were halogens. HVAC well, is...
Well, then, that's why they're... Yep,
they're terrible. They're bi-halogens. They're like a, you know, a single bulb. With HVAC is cheap with the airflow. Cooled seats are actually just ventilated. Huge turning radius. A hell of a car for cheap with a nice interior and a great exterior styling. But quality is lacking. This is one of those things that you don't really know. So I've spent way too much time around this car in the last year-ish. And you realize, like, I finally got it on the lift. And I cannot believe what they did. I mean, it only has 3 engine mounts. So, you know, like when you're talking about front-wheel drive transverse car, because the transaxle and the engine are bolted together, the whole thing experiences the total torque output of the engine times the gearing. And so for first gear, especially on something with a 9-speed that's got a very short first gear, you're talking about torque multiplication on the order of like 16 to 1. So you're talking 16 times the torque that comes out of a 3.6 liter V6. So you're talking, I don't know, I don't even do the math, 280 times 16. So what, 4,000 foot-pounds of torque? And so transverse cars always have a trans mount on one side, an engine mount on the other side that does mostly vibration, and then front and rear. And the rear takes the brunt of the load by pushing down typically. And then it'll have a front mount to stop the whole thing from rotating up. Mm-hmm. And Chrysler didn't put a front mount in it at all. Either that or it just fell off on this car and I can't tell. But like all 3 of the other mounts are broken in half on this car at 70,000 miles. Because of course they're overstressed by the fact that the primary mount that you fucking need more than anything else doesn't exist. Even the minivan, which is the same motor, has a front mount. This one, they were just
Chrysler.
Like, well, it was Fiat. So don't forget that thing is an Alfa Romeo to begin with. It's a Giulietta. Yeah.
What? Oh, Giulietta.
It's a Giulietta, yeah.
Sorry.
So it started out as a 1.6 liter, 1-cylinder diesel with 4 foot-pounds of torque, and at some point grew into the CUS wide platform, which became Dodge Dart and 200. They were like, forget it. It's for Americans. They don't know what. Yeah. Cars a pile of shit, but very fast.
The American way.
Yep. That was it, right? We're done? Are we done?
One more?
Sure. Okay, one more. 2049. Oh, another Jaguar. In period, I drove a 2016 Jaguar XJL all-wheel drive V6.
XJL V6.
Yes, long wheelbase XJ with a fucking V6.
So this is the last generation of XJ. Yeah.
Such a lovely sedan, and it's aging gracefully. That said, while this V6 delivers the thrust, it does not deliver the refinement I want. Very coarse over 4,000 RPM, but very much very muted.
Is this the same engine where they blocked off two cylinders?
Yeah, it's a V8. So it's a 90-degree V6 with two pistons basically blocked, missing, and two cylinders blocked off. I want the V8. The all-wheel drive puts the power down no problem, but the steering isn't quite as alive as I remember it. It could actually be E-Pass. I think the XJ also switched. If so, it's very good. So obviously I didn't take enough time to look under the hood. The infotainment still sucks despite new graphics, and the all-LCD gauge panel looks better than before with a couple themes, but I don't like any of them. I also don't like the 5,500 RPM red line with a 6,700 RPM limiter, no matter how much fun it is to go 1,000 into the red. I wonder why they did that.
Yeah, probably right, because they were trying to keep it from grenading.
That's probably true.
Because it's a 90-degree V6. Yeah.
Ride quality is very good, but the rear seems bouncy unless cats, with the adaptive suspension is in sport mode. Alas, an aging but still elegant and wonderful sports luxury sedan. I want one still. Hmm. I love that car.
Interesting. I like XJs. Yeah. Mine is a 1988 Porsche 930 slant-nose cabriolet in Guards Red, of course. I mean, yeah. Cabriolet.
No.
Four-speed.
No.
7-to-1 compression ratio. With that make CIS. That?
No.
Yeah.
Slant-nose, no.
Yeah, slant-nose.
I mean, that
yeah.
wouldn't have made it to the church without catching itself on fire by being struck by lightning because it's heresy.
Yeah. Oops. I mean, it's the wrong body, it's the wrong engine, it's the wrong transmission, it's just wrong. But it's also a quarter of $1 million because cocaine. I don't know.
It would have been the perfect car for a three-speed turbo hydromatic swap. Just fucking really ruin it. Yeah. It's almost there. Put drums on it.
Yeah, and all-wheel drive.
Yep. An E-Pass.
Yeah.
Well, I need that elective, one of those aftermarket electric power steering systems for classic cars.
Yes.
So let's buy one, fuck it up, and see if we can get even more money for it.
Oh, God, yeah. So it's the wrong car in every respect.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this has been another episode of the Carmudgeon Show featuring random number generator car reviews. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Carmudgeon Show. Yeah. Or not see you. You'll see us unless you don't see us because you're listening to us and not watching us.
You've somehow made what could have just been said bye.
No.
Very, very difficult. So ready? Everyone, bye.
Bye.